Fascinating insights there on Uber, and as I said earlier, one of the better performing stocks in the BizNews portfolio. Well, one we've added recently is Anglo American, and it was interesting this week talking to Bernard Swanepoel, who was full of praise for Duncan Wanblad, the chief executive of Anglo, and he reckons this is going to be a top company, perhaps even dominate its sector into the future. They've got a long way to go. Peter Major joins us now. Pete, are you as positive about Anglo American as Bernard is? And, you know, we want to see the stock doing something in the BizNews model portfolios.
No, I'm not as positive as Bernard, but I am positive, Alec. I think the guys have been way too harsh on Anglos and on Duncan. And it brings back memories of Tony Trayer. And, you know, Tony Trayer was conservative. He sort of missed the initial boom. And what did he do? Nothing. And that's what a good fund manager should do. If you think you missed something, but you're not quite sure, do nothing. So he didn't do anything. And Cynthia Carroll took over and she immediately started buying a whole bunch of assets. Then you had the great big correction. And had Tony Trayer still been in power then, which is only a year and a half, 2 years later, geez, Anglos would have been choking on cash. All the mining houses and companies fell 70-80%. He could have bought anything he wanted for 20 cents on the buck. So Duncan's not quite in that position, but he's in a good position. Anglos is in good shape. They've always had great assets, and there's no need to panic. And sure, he speeded things up or tried to, but you know what? If Billiton wants to offer a crazy price, that's up to the shareholders to accept. I'll be sad to see it go. But Billiton's got to worry more about how are they going to grow other than just taking over Anglos at a premium.
Just unpack that for us. Billiton did have a go at Anglo American. They were rebuffed. When are they able to have another go?
I think as of right now, or let me check out, like it could be the end of the month. It'd be quite a coincidence that from Halloween on, they can now buy it again or make an offer again. And I think one of the reasons we admitted it's worth them looking at this is it is so indeterminate and difficult to plan to build a new mine. You know, with governments just getting increasingly more difficult, legislation changing all the time, social and labor, it's not getting easier. It's getting more complicated and difficult. So that's what's delaying. It's not just the technical. It's all that extracurricular activity. You're lucky to build a mine 10 years after you want to build it. And from initial discovery to building it, you're looking at closer to 20 years. So companies say, hell, I'd rather pay a premium. I'm bullish on this metal. But that's not how a good fund manager would do it. You know, a good fund manager tries to be a little bit more scientific. Go back to Warren Buffett. I want to buy things that are knocked down. I want to buy things at a discount so I got some margin of safety. And we know from experience, 8 out of 10 acquisitions are total disasters. 1 out of 10 probably breaks even, and 1 out of 10 you make money on. So the odds are they're not going to really score the shareholders by paying a premium for Anglo American.
Despite that surge in the Anglo share price when Billiton or BHP Billiton made its offer, and then the subsequent decline as that offer left the table, the shares are still up 20% in pound terms this year. So being a good fund manager, how would you look at this? Would you look at it as a buy opportunity or wait for a bit later?
I always try and fine tune it, which often doesn't work. It squeezes out from me. I think it's a weak to moderate buy here. I think if a guy buys here 3, 4, 5 years later, he will have beat the all share index. So it's not a bad buy here. I've seen it down at 500 Rand. I think that's a great buy. It's now what, 560? So that's only up 10 or 12%. I wouldn't be paying much over the current price for it. But resources in general are really pounded down, Alec. Our all-share index has only been this low relative to the S&P twice in the history of man. So does history repeat itself? If it doesn't, it rhymes very similar. So our all-share does look really, really cheap here on a P basis. And Anglos looks pretty cheap here relative to our all share. And it's got a nice broad asset base. It's got good management. It's got a great CEO, I feel. So I would be full Angles. You know, what's market rating, market weighting? Yeah, it's not a bad buyer. Billiton looks even cheaper, you know, because people are afraid it's going to overpay for assets because it's out there trying to overpay for assets. So Billiton, I think it's mainly just riding down the iron ore curve. You know, the majority of its profits come from iron ore, and iron ore is about a 5-year low now. There's excess steel floating around. China looks like it's finally done all its big building, and now it's exporting excess steel. So I think that's one of the main reasons Billiton's trading so low. But both Billiton and Anglos, the whole resource sector, is quite bombed out because it's not flavor of the month or flavor of the year. Everything else is. You can see New York is actually selling resources in order to buy all this new tech. And I think that's a little bit overdone. I think we're looking a bit like 2000. You know, we're due for a correction on all this new wave, new era stuff. So, yeah, I'm a resource guy. That doesn't mean I always want to buy it. But just on all the historicals, resources other than gold are looking pretty good value now.
Well, I'll pick you up on gold in a moment. But there is the BRICS summit today. So using a little bit of perhaps lateral thinking, if the Americans don't want to buy resources, and particularly South African resources, might we see the BRICS countries starting to take an interest? China needs resources for its own industrial engine. And as the politicians get a bit closer, you get the sense, particularly because China's business is very strongly supported or even owned by the Chinese government, that there might be an alternative to BHP Billiton in as an Anglo suitor. What's your thought on that?
I don't know, Alec. Strategically, if you think like a warlord and you want to invade or take over other countries, yeah, you'd always go for the resources. You'd go for the oil, the gas, the timber, the water. But then that means you got to take over the land, which means you actually have to take over the whole country. So we always hear about, oh, these are strategic. You know, South African government loves using the word strategic. It really means, is there a chance they can get their fingers on some of the crumbs? But yeah, what's strategic in this world? I think it's been way, way overdone, oversold. Resources are distributed pretty evenly all over the world. So who's really got a monopoly on oil? Who's really got a monopoly on gold, on gas, on timber? So we hear China's busy investing all over Africa, wants to secure these assets. Who's withheld things from China anyways in the last 50 years, if not longer? You know, China could always get iron ore from somebody. They could always get the metals from somebody. They could always get gas and oil. Just look at the way Russia's got pretty extensive sanctions put on them since they invaded Ukraine. And yet, yeah, they're having to sell at a bit of a discount, but they're selling all their oil, all their gas, all their minerals. And each day, week, month that goes by, they're selling them at less of a discount. So I'll tell you what, I'm a little bit influenced by some of these new era presentations going around. I was at the business school alumni weekend, and they had Anton Musgrave presenting after lunch when you need people to wake up. Well, that was the guy to present. He just went through slide after slide and showed us and summarized what is going on in the world, how it is changing so quick. If you're trying to be number one, you're already too late. You have to be number uno, period. In other words, don't try and be number one in your industry. Just try and be leading an industry that doesn't even exist yet. And that's kind of how the rest of the things went. So I think these long-range scenario planning forecasts, oh, we're going to structure like this or that. I think the world is too dynamic and shifting under one's feet that you don't want to have a big corporation put too much effort, time, and money into setting up what they think is going to be the future business. It just changes too much, and you're just like a dinosaur. You're feet of clay. So, yeah, I'm not sure what's going to come out of this BRICS. You know, the bigger it gets, fine, pretty soon the whole world will be in it. The States is going to be knocking on the door saying, hey, can we have a role here too? You know, we're individual countries and companies. Let's just do what's best for us. Let's use what currency works for us. And let's join every organization that'll have us in that we think we can benefit from.
That's a little bit like the certainly the subtext to the South African relationship. But it's nice to be one of the five founders, I guess, of BRICS. A big South African company that's really cheap at the moment, if you look at it historically, is Sasol. I'm not sure if this is one you'd pay a lot of attention to, Peter, but I know our community are either invested or interested in investing in it. So perhaps you can give us some thoughts on what you think of Sasol right now, given it certainly isn't overpriced.
No, it's not overpriced, but Sasol is as much a victim as the new South African government as it is to the worldwide changing events. And some of those changing events are trying to clean up the environment, which means oil from coal is not a big plus. But its oil from gas technology was world leading, and it was making an effort to get involved in that internationally. It is making an effort to diversify internationally, because as we've seen, anybody staying in this country is just subject to so much shifting of regulations, policy, bad infrastructure, moody, temperamental government decisions, short-sighted decisions. You know, it is virtually suicide to have all your assets in this country. It's really close to corporate suicide. Warren Buffett's always bragged up the virtues of diversification. Now, that doesn't mean willy-nilly run out and just buy stuff. So poor Sasol, they are subject to a lot of the troubles that other local companies have, and they've got the ESG coming against them because environmentally, geez, they were right at the top of the list. But you'd think they had decades of pretty good management, decades of real innovative breakthroughs. And boy, they built things that people were talking about. They built things that very few people could even imagine. So they had that capability. I don't know how much they've lost it. I don't want to put them in the ISCOR category yet. You know, ISCOR was one of our eight big mining houses here at one time. And government, although they had a big role in forming it back in 1928, nurturing it, helping it come up, it was a regional powerhouse. You know, it was Africa's biggest steel maker by far. We can see ISCOR's they've not benefited from the new government at all. They've taken as much pain as all of our big corporates. Now government comes in and it offers them a couple pieces of candy here and there trying to help them. But that just shows what bad policy can do. And yeah, Sasol looks cheap. ISCOR looks cheap, but why are things going to change? Why are things going to make it go up? You know, it's still pretty much functional on the oil price, its share price. And look at oil. It's down here at $74. You know, it's at its long-term average if you're comparing it to Brent spot. You know, long-term average, that's the 80-year average, and oil's just sitting here. So it's hard to see Sasol going up without the energy prices going up, and I don't see that happening. You know, there's plenty of coal, plenty of oil, plenty of natural gas. So I would say you're going to be a pretty active fund manager to be buying Sasol, and there's a lot of them out there. But it's not a Warren Buffett buy and put away long-term hold like most of his companies.
Okay, we did promise to close off or to quiz you on gold. I know Kruger Rands have been a phenomenal investment for South Africans because of their rand content as well as the gold content. But you, I picked up that you're not that excited about gold right now, looking forward.
No, I'm not. It looks like one of those flagpole formations. And it's great. You know, it's great for the country, even though we've closed down 80% of our gold mines. You know, at least the 15% that are still open are generating profits. It's a sector that really needs it. And I don't believe there is another sector in this economy ever that had such spinoffs. It generated so much good for so many people. Because just take the example. They would go out and they'd find gold mine in the Orange Free State. And there's nothing but a couple farms there. And before you know it, you got little shops around the shaft sinking crew. Before you know it, you got a highway that's paved. Before you know it, there's a railroad. Then there's a warehouse. Then there's a town. Then there's a city. And you just look at all the subsidiary industries that formed around each gold mine, each and every gold mine. And so it's great for South Africa, this price. And at least Harmony Gold and our few remaining gold mines are open. They are capitalizing on it. They're doing much needed capex. I'm worried that they're looking at putting some of the money offshore because the things they're buying, I don't believe are cheap. I won't see they're great quality because they would have been grabbed. So if they can just be cautious with the money. And when we had this gold price run in the 70s, geez, we'd endured decades of low gold prices. So our mines were very efficient. We were the lowest cost producer on the planet. We put most of the world out of business in gold mining. So when the 70s gold price took off, we were ready for it. And we had a good tax formula that meant if you put the money back in the ground, you saved a lot on tax, rather than just handing it over. And that's what the mines did. And all that money they put back into the ground has helped the communities, the people, the cities, the national governments. And that's what got them through all the low gold prices of the 80s and 90s, was all that money they put back into the ground. And it's just devastating that we had such a horrible change in policy that we nationalized the mines and we did everything to drive those mines to stop investing and to close. We even assisted them in closing. It should be easy to open a mine. It should be impossible to close a mine. And our legislation and policies reverse that. We make it impossible to open a mine and real easy to close. So I have no doubts. The ANC likes to brag they were trained in Russia. I have no doubt they were trained in Russia because, boy, everything they've done is what a saboteur would do. So am I positive on gold? No, I think it's run too much. It's even kicking butt on cryptocurrencies. The last 5 or 6 years, they're trading positions. Who's performed best this month, this year? I think it's overdone. But it is reflecting the whole world is printing money like never before. And China and America are the two big leaders. So whether we have a BRICS currency or you stay with a Western dollar and pound, it doesn't matter. Both sides are printing funny money left and right. And you look at the candidates running for office in America, well, gold's discounting them because neither of them's talking about the economy. Each of them's just talking about printing money, cutting taxes, spending money where you don't have it. So it's a pretty safe bet. Whoever wins the election in America is probably going to be good for gold. But I would be taking profits if I made some in gold now. I would be diversifying into something that looks much, much less sexy and appealing. I just think it's too overdone.
And what would that be, Peter? What would be your diversification alternative?
It would probably be mining houses. It would probably be Billiton and Anglo's, Alec. Because I think they'll have great assets. I think they have good management. And if anything, I don't think they're diversified enough. I think Billiton was a little too reliant on iron ore. It's trying to diversify into phosphate. But yeah, they look pretty good investments. I would be taking money out of precious metal investments right now. Although I say precious metal, let's say gold, because even the platinums have come back quite a bit and don't look like bad value. But those PGM prices are still pretty high. Platinum is trading at its long-term average right now. It's not bombed out. Palladium is trading still a lot higher than its long-term average. Rhodium's trading a lot higher. So I don't even think platinum's cheap. It's just fallen a long ways. But I think for safety's sake, the way the world looks now, yeah, I'd want most of my assets in the mining houses or in the OSI.
Peter Badger, Director of Mining at Modern Corporate Solutions, and I'm Alec Hogg. It's been a real pleasure having that masterclass from Pete on what's going on in resources, commodities, and investing.